Well, hello there. You look kind of hungry to me, or maybe you're just thirsty, is that it? Thirsting for a bit of change, I think, and in the mood to chew on some meaty ideas. Well, given that this is a podcast and that I can't actually see you, let alone figure out exactly what your appetite might be, let's just get on with it, shall we? Welcome to the preview episode of Digesting Food Studies, a series that dives into some of the big ideas from the deliciously expanding field of food studies. It's a podcast for everybody who wants to turn systems research about food into on-the-ground action, whether you're in a classroom, a field, a conference room, or a kitchen. We're going to talk about agriculture and education, food justice and sustainability, policymaking, cooking, and a bunch of other subjects, as well as the somewhat broader themes of power, gender, sustainability, hunger, and, well, too many to name here. Food is expansive. What's more, we'll make concrete connections among people and places and politics and culture so that you can understand food's complexities without feeling overwhelmed. And hopefully, what you hear will inspire you to dig deeper, checking out the many remarkable articles we've published in Canadian Food Studies, the Journal of the Canadian Association for Food Studies. So who am I listening to, you might be asking yourself. First of all, I'm David Santo, one of the managing editors of Canadian Food Studies, or CFS as we tend to call it. I'm a freelance academic and, of course, the host of this podcast. You'll also be hearing from other food scholars, those we've published in the journal over the last 10 years, as we focus on one of the chewy subjects that they've researched and written about. Each episode will kick off with a little amuse-bouche, a taste of food culture served up by the journal's other managing editor, Alexia Moyer. And closing things out, the aftertaste, in which we hear from a student with their reactions to the featured article, what they thought about it, what they took away from it, and how they might use the publication in their own work. Altogether, that's the Digesting Food Studies menu, a sampler of different ways of thinking about and enjoying what food studies has to offer. This teaser episode diverges a bit from the usual, however, giving a slightly different take on what this podcast is about. First, I'll chat with Alexia to hear how literature and art and food culture and the built environment can offer useful points of entry to other food systems research. Then a quick hop back in time to the origins of Canadian food studies as I talk with Hélène Desjardins, the journal's founding editor-in-chief. The full menu will be on offer starting with episode one, but for now, take a moment to let us whet your appetite and get those digestive juices flowing. Yum. So, Alexia, thank you so much for joining me in this digestion process of food studies as we embark on the first episodes of Digesting Food Studies, the CFS podcast. We're going to explore some bits and pieces of food that are related to the stories and the articles that we're also going to be talking about with our authors. We're calling it amuse-bouche. Why are we doing this? Would you tell our listeners out there in Radio Land what this whole segment is about that we're about to embark on?
Well, let's think of this term amuse-bouche. There's an amusement that is in the term. It's an introduction. It's not quite an appetizer. It's certainly not a main dish. It's just a taste of something to get us started, to get our
digestive juices flowing.
To get our digestive juices flowing, exactly.
And we're going to have way too much fun with this and probably annoy a lot of people with our food puns. But okay, we're going for it. So we've got the amuse-bouche.
Yes.
It'll introduce people to the theme of the conversation with our author.
Exactly. And working through with a cultural object.
Right.
Or something that is allows us to anchor the conversation in our lived experience.
Okay, so a bit of food literature, a recipe from an old cookbook, a kitchen implement. I know you have
some funny words.
You've got a lot of good stuff planned. I mean, and this is your wheelhouse, right? This is what you have spent a lot of your time academically doing, correct?
Yeah, so I have a background in Canadian food studies and Canadian literature, and I've combined the two, and I'm interested in food narratives, and have been working with the journal for about 5 years now as co-managing editor.
Co-managing editor with me. But you're published yourself. You are a writer, you are a creator of words and texts and images in other books.
Yes, I edit for other people. I write my own things as well, and I am also a cook.
And you are cooked.
Yeah.
Thank you for diving into this with me. I think it's going to be fun. I hope our listeners agree. Hopefully they'll give us lots of positive feedback on the titillating temptations that we delight them with each week.
We look forward to chatting with you.
Thanks. Ellen Desjardins is a former food studies scholar who transitioned over the years from public health nutrition to sustainable food systems work in Ontario to research in human geography. She was part of the team that brought forth Canadian Food Studies in 2013, serving as its editor-in-chief for the following 6 years. Today, she's retired from academia and lives on the southern end of Vancouver Island, focusing on pottery, gardening, and fishing. Well, welcome, Ellen, to Digesting Food Studies, 11 years after we started Canadian Food Studies together. It's wonderful to be chatting with you and to talk about the history and how this whole journal even got started.
Well, thank you. And I'm really looking forward to this.
Let's go back a bit in history. If you would just tell me, like, what your first memory of thinking about, let's do a food studies journal and let's call it Canadian Food Studies. And where did the seed for this whole journal come about?
Right. So a few years after CAFS was established in 2005, that's the Canadian Association for Food Studies, and the CAFS conferences were clearly gaining energy, executive members started talking about creating a journal. And around 2010, I remember Mustafa Koch and some colleagues, they sent around a survey asking about people's interest in a new journal that would be specifically focused on Canadian issues and Canadian researchers. They knew there were a number of food-related journals out there already, including ones that were multidisciplinary, but none that were targeted to Canada. There was a journal out of McGill called Cuisine. And when you look at the programs of the CAFS conferences since 2006, it's really quite astonishing, the diversity, the quality, the sheer number of food-related topics that people were presenting on. It was 2012, just prior to the CAFS conference in Waterloo, that the momentum kind of gelled to get a journal going. And at an executive meeting early in the year, they passed a motion that a portion of the CAFS budget should go to the journal.
And I remember when it got announced, I was a timid new PhD student, and I walked up to you and said, "Hi, I'm David, and I used to be a book editor in New York, and I would love to help copy edit if you need help with that." That was my opening gambit. That's my first memory of talking to you about it. What was your own motivation for taking it on as a project?
So I volunteered to be the editor-in-chief of the new journal. You got to think, what was I thinking? And I thought I could be of help because I had been the editor of the quarterly Ontario Nutrition Education, ONE.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
That publication for some years. A big, big major factor was the several others who wanted to be part of the team. And you just mentioned yourself. And Phil Mount, he stepped up to be associate editor. And he was then a PhD student as well, an awesome guy. And a number of people from all over the country offered to be part of the editorial committee and the board. By 2013, we had a great editorial team that included you, David, and also the intrepid Rob McRae. And our wonderful managing editor was Wes Tuvanjo, and he was also a doctoral student at University of Waterloo. So students who started, that's important, eh?
And we, of course, had the Open Journal Systems platform to support us. It was really with that that we were able to launch a journal. It allowed us to create an open access journal, to create the whole structure.
You know, when you mention the open access kind of platform, it was University of Waterloo that provided that for us for free.
And they still do.
The genuine giddiness that we were in charge of a vibrant, dynamic machine felt like a machine to me. And it was in French and English. And it had a graphic design, which you facilitated, our logo in teal and brown.
Yes.
This bowl shape, which symbolized an eating or cooking vessel with an open end. And that meant a constant openness to new ideas and methods and diversity. So going back to the vision that we embraced for the journal, I just have to quote, "The journal sees food as a point of connection among communities of thought and practice, challenging disciplinary boundaries and inspiring new frontiers of thinking." I just love that vision for the journal. Mm-hmm. It was another motivation, right, to keep going. And we felt sometimes that we were the platform for radical thinking in food studies. Do you feel that?
I always felt like we were doing something pretty special, that we were enabling food to be written about, talked about, felt about, created about in all sorts of different ways, not just in text, but because it was an audiovisual digital platform, we could do all those things and really honor that food is studied and practiced in many, many different ways, some of which translate really well into conventional articles and some of which translate much better into photo essays or videos or podcasts like we're doing right now, because you were such, in my memory, such an incredible leader and so open. I remember you and I having a wild conversation about research creation and how to make research creation a viable, publishable thing.
Just because things are not in a text and full of statistics and such, it is no less rigorous, no less meaningful and usable by other researchers. It translated also, you know, into a network of people across Canada. It helped to bring about a community of food studies researchers, and they're still there. I just remember encouraging certain researchers to publish their qualitative research studies when they thought that no journal would accept this approach. I remember, you know, one woman from Nova Scotia who had done this qualitative study, and she very tenuously had submitted it. And then she wanted to talk to me on the phone and said, I don't know if this is valid or not. And I said, oh, darn right, it's valid. It's beautiful.
I think thanks to those kinds of conversations that you had, we've now got a whole variety of different categories that people can submit within. So we don't just have research articles. We have perspectives and commentaries and field reports and audiovisual and design works and artworks. And it was really that openness to, yeah, let's have a conversation. Let's publish this. Let's make this knowledge available, even though it hasn't always been considered important knowledge by other publishers. It's always a challenge when you're trying to do things that are a little bit outside the box or a lot outside the box. So now that 10, 11, 12 years have passed since the launch of this beautiful baby, what have you been working on? What has the journal maybe made you think about in different ways in terms of your own work, in terms of the food that you grow and eat, or the foods that you write about, or the food that you think about and research about and photograph?
I really love to learn by listening to people and to glean key points about their narratives through grounded theory. But research that intertwines different methodologies like qualitative and quantitative, and that joins different disciplines like science and arts and humanities, was not commonly done. But editing the journal, as I now think back on it, was a social and mental boost, a kind of a journey, actually. The baby lived and it thrived.
And the baby is having babies. This podcast is one of the journal's babies.
Baby is having babies. It's a grandbaby. Oh my gosh. And so I'm a grandmother, right? And professionally, I took on my PhD and this journal editor work at quite a ripe old age. And I was thinking about, now that I'm old, I can wear purple. Like, do you know that poem?
What poem is that?
There's a poem that says, when I get old, I'm going to wear purple, and I'm going to wear hats, and I'm not going to wear old lady shoes, and I'm going to dance around, you know.
Well, with that inspiration, I think we're going to redesign the CFS logo with a lot of purple in it, just to honor the fact that we can do it if we want to.
That's my final feeling that I'm left with when I look back. It was a heady time, and it continues. That's the wonderful part of it.
I'm just so grateful, not just to talk to you about this, but also for that incredible history that you laid down, that incredible ethos, the kindness, the openness, and everything, because the journal wouldn't be here without you. So thank you from all of us at CAFS and CFS. And thank you from me personally, because it has transformed my life.
Well, thank you again for this opportunity. It's been just lovely to chat.
It's been great. Thank you. So that's it for now. Coming up in future episodes, however, we'll be talking about meat studies, feminist food studies, the social economy of food, and the ways in which food art can reveal new understandings of hunger and identity and labor. We'll hear from researchers focusing on food in prisons, indigenous food knowledge, the corporate control of agriculture, food waste, food school programs, and how menu archives provide historians with a large lens on histories of migration and taste and commerce. We'll even talk to an expert on that oh-so-colonial taste treat from the West Coast, the Nanaimo Bar. With all that is coming up, there is something for everyone's hunger. So please, keep coming back for seconds and thirds and fourths and, well, you know, everything. Thank you very much to today's guests, Alexia Moyer and Ellen Desjardins. The music for the show comes from Alex Guz and Evgeny Barduja on Pixabay. And our executive producers are Rachel Engler-Stringer, Laurence Godin, Charles Lipko, Phil Loring, and Kristen Lowett. I'm David Santo. Take a look at the show notes for links to the journal from which this all derives, Canadian Food Studies, as well as CAFS, the Canadian Association for Food Studies. If you want to become part of the conversation, connect with us on social media and join the LinkedIn community. Become a member of CAFS or think about submitting an article or an artwork to the journal. Complete details are available on the relevant websites. And don't forget to like, review, and subscribe. You know that a quick click and a kind word for the show is always appreciated. The next episodes are already online, so come back for more. It's a long and diverse buffet of subjects, so pick a few of your favorites, try something a little spicy, and remember to always tip your servers. Yes, there will be lots of food wordplay in this podcast. Sorry about it.